wah, wah, wee, wah.
How do you feel like a new person? Like, is there a Queer Eye effect now that you have this outfit on?
Not really. I feel anti-Semitic.
because of which part of what you're wearing?
Mostly the gigantic nose coupled with the, like, fake rabbi hat, you know?
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that.
I'll take off the fake nose.
Wow, I'm looking at photos related to my pop culture moment. What's a pop culture moment? What a pop culture moment. Should I just jump in? Yeah.
What is it?
We have to at least start the podcast. Do it again, Shoshana.
Welcome to Pop Culture Pasha,
where we irreverently discuss reverent texts. Okay, it feels like a... What's the word, like, disrespectful that I'm even going to bring up what I'm about to bring up as my pop culture moment?
Oh, no, I also had a disrespectful pop culture moment.
We're just going to have to do it. No, just that, like, you would talk about Torah and Bret Michaels in the same... You don't know who this is.
I'm Googling. I'm on it.
Okay. Here's my pop culture moment. It's a little complicated. I'm Valerie. This week...
Oh, I know who Bret Michaels is.
Yeah, he's the lead singer of Poison, and he had his own reality show.
Yeah.
Called Rock of Love.
Yeah.
And there were, I think, 3 seasons of Rock of Love, and then there was a season called Rock of Love Bus.
Yeah, I know that. It used to be on, in Australia, it used to be on Fox 8. I used to see all the ads for it.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous show. It was, like, very much like Flavor of Love, where it's, like, 20, 25 women competing to, like, be his girlfriend, and then they would have to do challenges that are, like what would happen if you're a rock star's girlfriend. I don't know.
Yeah.
And just, like, the first season, one of the girls got his name tattooed on the back of her neck.
Oh, my God.
Which was pretty wild. Anyway, so the layer... So my friends and I were obsessed with this show when we were, like, 16, 17.
You don't have to qualify why you're obsessed with the show.
No. I'm not qualifying why. I think it's obvious why. It's, like, everything that's good about... Well, and I also think, actually, this was a really interesting time in reality TV and dating shows.
Same here.
Because... You had Flavor of Love, you had Rock of Love, you also had a double shot at love with Tila Tequila. Oh, that was very Tequila was wild.
She's also, like, anti-Semitic, no?
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Well, she was probably anti-Semitic then, too, unfortunately. Yeah, anyway, just, like, a wild set of shows.
That was also, they had that show with the bus. Like, it's an MTV dating show.
Oh, Next?
Yeah, that show was weird.
That, it was a crazy
show. And they'd step off the
show.
Bus, and they'd have, like, the 3 weird facts, and then they'd go on, like, the weird dates.
Yeah.
And there was also Date My Mom. Did you ever watch that?
No.
Date My Mom was where, like, Eli's not, and he knows what I'm talking about. Date My Mom was, like, they'd go on dates with the contestant's mom, and she'd convince, like, and then choose a daughter based on the mom.
Yeah.
That was also wild.
There was also, yes, that was a crazy show.
Yeah.
And then there was also Dating Naked. Was that more recent?
That feels more recent.
There was also a show, Dating Naked, that was like, yeah, you basically show up to the date. And then there were other ones that were kind of like Next, that were like similar type challenge
things. Was the one they used to kidnap you, and then like...
Oh, like Room Raiders?
Yeah, was that the one? And they'd go through your
stuff. No, that's a totally different show. But yeah, they would choose who they wanted to date based on like what your bedroom looked like.
I found this article called 11 Forgotten MTV Dating Shows.
And please
Room
send
Raiders
it to me.
And Room Raiders is one of them.
That's what it was called? Nice. Yeah.
Good job.
There's
something called Singled Out from 95 to 98.
What?
I never heard of that. They have something called Dismissed. They have something called Tail Daters. Room Raiders is the one that I was thinking of, because, like, you're in a room with, like...
You're with the other potentials, and then you're choosing
and they just go through
whether or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then there's Date My Mom, duh. Next, a classic.
Anyway, what
Parental Control as well was similar to Date My Mom, I think.
Oh, yeah, where it was, like, the parents get to decide. Yeah, you meet their parents.
Yeah. And then A Shot at Love with Tequila was wild. She was literally the first bisexual person I remember seeing on television.
Well, and, like, the only one, like, the premise, I haven't seen that in any other dating show.
Yeah.
They're all very heteronormative.
Oh, no, I think they did. I think in Australia this past year they had a bisexual bachelorette.
And interesting. Did she date both men and women?
And she had men
and women,
yeah.
That's cool. Very progressive Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, I just hate to say this, but, like, the Australian bachelorette doesn't mean anything.
I don't watch it at all.
Okay. But that's what I'm saying, is like the Bachelor franchise in...
Oh, in the States is like...
In the States is like a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I wonder, like, are people still watching The Bachelor? Oh, yeah, Bachelor in Paradise is another good spinoff one. Also, have you all watched Too Hot to Handle?
I know what it is. I haven't watched it.
I've watched it. It's kind of good. I don't know. I enjoyed it. All the people are really attractive, so that part's fun.
There's also, like,
It's also, sorry, it's an interesting dynamic, too, on the most recent season. There was one girl that every guy was just, like, immediately obsessed with. Classic. Like, they were like, she's so beautiful, and you see her, and she's pretty, but I was, like, not necessarily prettier than the other girls, so I was like, there's something about, like, being with this person in person, and I've certainly had friends. I've never been that person. I've been that person once, actually, where a guy, like, saw me. I didn't speak to him at all, and then later he was like, I really like Valerie. And then this was the crazy part. He was like, should I shower? I would brush my teeth for her. Like, all of this crazy stuff. And I was like...
Why wasn't he doing that before?
That's great question. That is a great question. Anyway, but I feel like I know those people that, like, people lose their shit when they meet them.
Yeah, that's
fair. Yeah. Anyway, but my pop culture moment was really going to be a layer upon Rock of Love obsession, which was I had a shirt that said Barack of Love.
Nice.
Because it was also at the time when Barack Obama was very popular. Yeah. I wonder if it's still somewhere. Like, I hope I saved it. That seems like a relic that I should have held on to from Urban Outfitters.
Urban Outfitters.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yes. So, yeah, I just wanted to take you on that journey today.
Cool.
Which one of those shows, like, barring the heteronormativity, I guess you could say A Shot of Love with Tila Tequila, but is there any show, like, if somebody raided your room, do you think they would want to date you?
Oh, my room is a mess most of the time. Also, they definitely planted stuff in those rooms, you know what I mean? Like... To make it interesting.
I just have a memory of them going into someone's room and there, like, weren't sheets on the bed or, like, something disgusting like that. Yeah.
My pop culture moment. I had one and then it felt too mean, so I'm going to go with a different one. So once one of my goals in life was to be friendly enough with Anne Hathaway that I could call her Annie Hathaway.
Okay.
Because everyone in her, like, if you watch interviews of, like, her cast members, they all call her Annie. And, like, her family calls her Annie. Like, she goes by Annie, IRL. And so that was always, like, that's the when goal. You know you've made it, right?
Yeah.
But then Anne Hathaway, and this is my pop culture moment, Anne Hathaway coming out and asking everyone to call her Annie. Like, she, and, like I don't know if she announced it on, like, a TV show or something, but she's like, I want to be, like, just call me Annie. I want to be called Annie.
Like, as her stage name, she wants to be Annie Hathaway.
I don't think it was a stage name. She's still Anne Hathaway, but, like...
Maybe it's for you, Shoshana.
I think she was speaking directly to me.
Yeah.
Annie Hathaway.
She looked out of the screen.
Cute. Annie is such a cute little girl name. Like, oh, it's adorable.
It's okay. It's one of those names where I'm like, Anne to Annie. Like, Annie is two syllables. Anne is one. Like, it's a nickname where it's not shorter than the actual name.
I think Annie is really cute. So there. So Anne Hathaway being Annie, I think...
Very relevant.
Exactly. Well, that's why I did it. My original one was going to be Anne Hathaway disastrously hosting the Oscars with James Franco. Again, felt a bit mean.
Yeah.
But also, it's very relevant. They're releasing the Oscar nominations, like, tomorrow. I'm very excited. Oh,
that's exciting.
Very, my gosh, very exciting
times.
I'm
going to have so much to do.
Yeah, I'm going to have so much to do.
No, you've seen, like, all of the movies.
I've seen a lot of them, but not all of them.
Yeah. What's still on your list?
What is on
my list? I mean, you
list?
Don't know what's nominated, but I guess
we I haven't know. Seen Power of the Dog yet. That's big on my list.
Oh, I have. I did not like it.
Yeah, you didn't like it. It's going to win huge.
That's a bummer.
I think, like, maybe in terms of... Like, I think Jane Campion has a huge chance of getting Best Director for it.
Mm.
In which case, I think she'll be the second woman ever to get Best Director, which is insane.
That is insane.
Also, the first woman to get director, Best Director, I'm pretty sure it was 2009 for The Hurt Locker.
Hmm.
And again, I'm almost certain that the only time after that a woman was nominated for an Oscar was when Greta Gerwig was nominated for Little Women.
Fascinating.
And, like, all of that time in between, I don't think you had a single female director.
Listen, the world is still sexist, Shoshana.
It's insane.
It's insane.
It's wild.
Also relevant to this week's movie.
I also have up on my screen now, because I didn't realize that Poison sang Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
I just want to tell you that I saw Bret Michaels perform live once, and okay. He sang that song.
Well, I was going to say my other pop culture moment is...
at the La Jolla State Fair.
I don't know what any of that means.
La Jolla's in San Diego.
I was going to say that Every Rose Has Its Thorn, Miley Cyrus covered that song on her debut album. Meet Miley Cyrus, or whatever it was called.
That's funny. It's a classic
for
rock
some
song.
Reason, my songs... that Miley Cyrus has covered / Miley Cyrus songs that other famous people have covered is like a weird special interest of mine. I've told you the Cher story, right?
No.
Okay, so I was listening to this random like Spotify radio playlist and the Cher song comes on. And you can tell it's Cher straight away because right. like...
You can always tell it's Cher.
And what happened was like, I'm like, why do I know every single lyric to this song?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized
it was a Jonas Brothers song.
No, it was a Miley Cyrus song.
Wait, but Cher covered a Miley Cyrus song.
Here's the thing. It was a Miley Cyrus song from the last song. And it wasn't even the main song from the last song. Like, she had When I Look At You was, like, the one that they released as, like, the main single. This is another song called I Hope You Find It that was, like, buried halfway through the soundtrack to that movie. The only two songs I'm pretty sure she had on the soundtrack. And Cher just, like, found that song. A random... Not released as a single song of Miley Cyrus's and decided to cover it for, like, one of her albums. And the Cher version is awesome.
Well, okay, I mean, there's so many ways that could have, like, that Cher could have come across that song.
I can't think of a single one that, like, is plausible in my head.
It could, like, have been someone who worked for Cher who was like, hey, you have to listen to this song.
I don't know, I think she spoke about it once. It also, like, because I remember, like, when she spoke about it, the lyrics take on very different meaning when it's sung from a young person versus when it's sung by Cher, like, an older person. Literally, it was on the last song soundtrack. It wasn't released as a single. It made it to 90. It peaked at number 5. And it only played through in the final credits. And then Cher covered it. Which is insane.
Shoshana.
I'm sorry, that was my Scrabble.
Those of you who are at home, take a shot because you heard someone's phone.
You can never hear it. Every time I listen back, you can never hear it.
Sometimes I edit it out. Yeah.
Anyway, so then Cher's version was like a country pop ballad. It was fantastic. And I think that everyone should go listen to it.
Okay, so how many minutes in are we? If you're listening at home, we're only 10 minutes in, so...
I feel like we've been speaking...
We're 14
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, I was like, we've been speaking for ages.
Sorry, I was looking at the wrong time signature.
It's a fun game to play.
Okay, tell us what the Parsha is.
This week's Parsha is Parshas Tetzaveh. Chabad.org/nutshell/Tetzaveh.
Wow.
It's not really that, Eli. Don't worry. It's not /nutshell/Tetzaveh. Do you think if Chabad.org knew how often I mentioned them in this podcast, they'd send a cease and desist?
Probably, yeah.
I'm going to tweet it later and see if they respond to me, because they sometimes respond to me. Okay. Hashem tells Moshe that he should get some pure olive oil from Bnei Israel to put for the Ner Tamid, or like the forever flame, the everlasting flame of the menorah. The menorah is supposed to always be lit, because Aaron kindles it every... evening? From evening till morning, I think it is.
Anyway. Yeah, but isn't there one of them that stays lit magically?
Ner Tamid. I think it's the middle one. Always has to be lit, essentially.
Yeah.
Because the other ones you light, if you light it... No, you light all of them.
But there's, like, a thing about one of the one... No. The one that's, like, closest... This is in the Beit HaMikdash, but the one that's, like, closest to the entrance to the... Kodesh HaKodeshim, like, leans back, like, towards...
They all have, like, weird angles. Or, like, they're all angled to the Shamash. That's, I think, a Rashi or something. I don't know, it's all, like, weird shit. And then it goes into detail, most of this parsha goes into detail about the garments that the Kohanim wear when they serve in the Mishkan. Or as we learned last week, the English word for that is tabernacle.
Oh, God, I was really hoping you had forgotten about never. That.
People on Shabbat were like, our friends who listened to this podcast, yeah. They were like, it was really impressive that you...
Which of our friends did you have Shabbat with?
We had people over on Friday night.
Wow, I guess my invite got lost in the mail.
It was supposed to be just like
the Israeli postal system, am I right?
It was supposed to be me and Michael F.
Uh-huh.
And then Claire was standing there when we made the arrangements and was like, well, fuck me, I guess. And I was like, Claire's obviously also invited. Mm-hmm. Meryl was there because she's my roommate.
Uh-huh.
My other roommate was also there because she's my roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael asked if his roommates could come.
Wow, so it was really a party.
It's pretty fun.
Okay. Yeah, sounds great.
You had so lunch fun. with Joe and Rachel and Leora May.
I did.
Yeah.
We had a great time.
And I wasn't invited to that, and I'm not complaining.
Yeah. Well, because now I have some COVID concerns about her practices.
Mine?
You had a meal with how many people?
Yeah, but it was like three roommates who are always all together. That's and true. Claire, who never leaves her room besides to come to parties.
Listen, same.
So I thought I was safe. Anyway, so they were all really impressed that I kept up tabernacle for the whole episode last week.
Oy,
so I now I have to keep it up every week.
I wish they hadn't forward. Given you that encouragement. So I have to tell you that Yarden, when I was editing the podcast, I was like playing that part and I was like, I have something to say about the tabernacle. And Yarden was like, wait, I want to hear what you say. And I was like, you can listen like all of the other plebes.
That is you say it like plebes.
Yeah, what should I say?
I say plebis? Like, I say like plebs. No, because it's short for pleb.
No, it's short for plebeians.
Plebeians.
Eli agrees with me.
I say it like plebeian.
I don't think you're right. This might be like a tabernacle situation.
Tabernacle. It's spelled in like, well, the plural is plebes.
Wait, now again?
Now I'm down a rabbit hole. Why I put a
take another off. Shot if you're at home.
Oh. I'm going to get stuck in a rabbit hole. Yeah. Huh, I found it. No. First line of Wikipedia. In ancient Rome, plebeian, they spell plebeians, also called plebs, with no E after the B when you shorten it.
I hate it when we're both right.
Nice.
Okay, anyway, we're talking about the Parsha. How did we get here?
So the priestly garments, which the Kohanim wear when they're in the tabernacle serving Hashem. All of them wore a ketonet, which was a full-length linen tunic. They all wore what they call mechnasayim, which are linen, like, pants, breeches.
I was hoping they were free-balling it under there.
No, they weren't. I'm so...
This is literally why you're
I done, hate that so much.
Recommend this podcast.
Now we can't recommend it to teenagers when you say things like, I really wish the Kohanim were free-balling it under the ketonet. God damn it, Valerie.
You think that teenagers aren't talking about their balls all the time?
Yeah, but they don't need us to talk about it, too. We're supposed to be the adults here.
Okay, we could cut that part off.
Okay, then after that they wear... after that they wear a linen turban, mitznefet or migba'at. And then after that they also wear an avnet, which is like a sash, almost like an obi around the waist. I think it's thinner than an obi, but it's like... wound around the waist, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, like one of those belts that if you're Hasidic you wear like on Shabbat.
Exactly like your, that.
What's that called?
Oh my god, what's it called?
A girdle?
Gatel.
And that's the same thing that
girdle?
Am I
it's a gartel.
I just can't tell if it's your accent or if it's my accent. No, it's also this thing.
Okay. So in English, you spell it G A R T E L, but it sounds like that should be Gartel. But it's more like it comes from the same word as girdle, the same German word.
It's also the thing that, like, the bride and, like, the Rebbe hold so when that they do can the mitzvah dance at the wedding.
Mitzvah tanz. Yeah.
Sure. You've probably actually seen it happen. I've never been to a wedding. Oh, I also facilitated it. You took off your own girdle.
No, like, okay, so my friend Ella got married.
Uh-huh.
And her, like, one of her best friends is my friend David, mm-hmm. who is a man, and they are both Shomer Negiyah and don't touch the opposite genders.
Mm-hmm.
And so David got, I, like, got a a napkin off the table and, like, wound it up like you're about to whip someone.
Uh-huh.
And I, like, gave one end to David and, like, rushed him to the side, the women's side, and gave Ella the other end. And they danced with it.
Cute.
But I have seen actual mitzvah tunts, like, with Hasidic rabbis at weddings. It's just so funny to watch.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it's, like, a gartel, like, the belt that they make so they can, like, carry keys not in an Eruv.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking of.
I was thinking of that. Because that's funny to me, that, like, they were just wearing keys on the, like, they couldn't carry their keys in the tabernacle.
That's funny.
So they just had to put it on their belt.
The keys to their tents.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
gotta drive home.
You know,
cool.
You can never be too sure about those other Israelites.
So those were the clothes for just the Kohanim. And then you had, the Kohen Gadol had, like, extra things that he wore. And that included the ephod, which was an apron type thing that he wore over the top that was, like, blue, purple, reddish,
mm-hmm.
and also had gold threads. Then he wore the choshen, which was the breastplate that had, like, the stones that represented all of the 12 tribes that, like, had magical powers that they used for the different lot things. He wore the me'il, which was a blue coat that had gold bells and, like, pomegranate decorations on the bottom, which I just love because it proves that we've always been obsessed with pomegranate decorations.
We have always been
obsessed. The whole time. Yeah. And then he wore the tzitz, which was like a plate on his forehead, or for the Americans, his forehead. And it had, I think it said like Kiddush Hashem, like inscribed on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also get at the end of the parasha, Hashem gives instructions to Aaron and Aaron's four sons for a 7-day, a week-long initiation into being Kohanim and into the priesthood, and how they should make this golden altar, the Ketoret altar, which is the mini one that was, like, inside the tabernacle that they burnt incense on.
Mm-hmm.
That instruction's also given right at the end.
Interesting.
If you're wondering, Aaron's sons' names are Nadav, Avihu, Eleazar, and Itamar.
And when they get burned up...
Only two of them get burnt up.
I know.
Yeah.
When two of them get burnt up,
yeah.
Eltzafan is the one who goes in to get them, which is where my mom's family's last name is from.
Nice.
Blammo.
Cool. And that's the Parsha.
And that's the Parsha. Wait, but how come in this picture I'm looking at of the Kohen Gadol's outfit, he has like a white hat like the one you just bought?
Okay.
You should dress as the Kohen Gadol for Purim.
When, that's actually, there's a little family in Sydney who, like, the son's always been as the Kohen Gadol. When I mentioned...
All of them?
One of them always.
Who's going to tell them?
When I...
That only one of them gets to be the Kohen Gadol.
When I said that there was a linen turban, there's two different names for it, which is Mitznefet and Migba'at. And I assume that, I think the Migba'at is the one that the Kohen Gadol wears. He wears a different type of hat than the others. His looks more like, I'd say, like a chef's hat.
Yeah, and you know,
Then the regular Kohen ones looks in pictures more like a turban that's wrapped up,
like a toque. That's what a chef's hat is called.
It's toque. That's what Canadians call beanies.
And
but I think it's toque.
No, toque. I think they say toque. Toque. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's my Canadian friends.
I'm half Canadian. I'm more Canadian than you. What I say is law. Canadian
okay.
law.
Canadian law. Go marry a Mountie and get back to me.
From your lips to God's ears.
And didn't they find one of the little pomegranate bells, like, in the tunnels underneath Jerusalem?
I have no bloody clue.
They did.
Jamie.
Perhaps. Tour guides love to talk about that. You should ask Jamie. They did. They found it, archaeologist-sized.
I matched with someone on Tinder, and they said they're doing a master's of archaeology, and they're currently in Jerusalem, like, doing archaeology work.
Fascinating.
And I think the phrase I used was, where are you archaeologying?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think should be a word.
Yeah. And what did they say?
Haven't gotten a reply yet.
Uh-huh.
It's fine. She also follows me on Instagram.
Wait, this is somebody on a dating app?
I said Tinder at the beginning of
I wasn't
Sorry.
Listening.
You're never listening. Valerie.
I didn't know you're on Tinder.
Yeah. I'm on a few.
On a few Tinders?
On a few.
On Expedition Maker, did you follow that last year?
I don't know what that is.
It was like this a competition for, like, Jewish makers. And so it's, like, all these different crafts. Like, Hadar Cohen did it, and she did, like, a performance piece. And then there were rounds, and, like, someone got kicked out every round. Anyway, I'm pretty sure it was the guy who won made, like, a breastplate of the Kohen Gadol with, like, different... It was, like, but the breastplate was made with these different panels that you could, like, little windows, like, see through. But then they each had, like, a different colored plastic in them, like the gems. And then he made this thing that then when you held it up and you looked through it, you, like, saw different messages. Like, that's it was really cool.
Eli says, did you know that the chest plate thingy was in part inspiration for Darth Vader's chest plate?
Well, that's also, this sign is from the Kohen.
Do you want to explain verbally what you're doing for our audience?
I am spreading my middle and index fingers away from my ring and pinky fingers to create a V shape.
You're doing the Vulcan salute.
I'm doing the Vulcan salute.
With both hands. And if you join those together, that's what the Kohanim do when they do the Birkat Kohanim.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do it, Valerie. Stop.
Oh.
Kohens only.
Because you were looking at me.
Coins only. You're not supposed to join it together.
It's like I'm an electric, like...
Literally, people at Chabad school used to get so mad at that. You were allowed to do this, but you weren't allowed to put together.
Oh. I didn't realize they put their hands together.
Yeah, I think they do. They join it. Because I think it's supposed to be like it's like windows. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really get it.
I don't remember the little midrash says that far back.
I'm kidding. I never look at them when they do it. So
me neither.
I wouldn't know.
Me neither. Should we talk about the movie?
Yeah, let's talk about the movie. Because
that's the part. Do you want to give the summary?
Yeah, so this week we watched 2006's The Devil Wears Prada.
Ooh.
An incredible movie based on a book by Lauren Weisberger from 2003. The film adaptation stars Meryl Streep as Miranda Priestley, a powerful fashion magazine editor.
Hell yeah.
She's supposed to be Anna Wintour from Vogue.
Oh, yeah.
And Anne Hathaway, or Annie Hathaway, as Andrea Andy Sachs, a college graduate who goes to New York City and lands a job as Priestley's co-assistant. Emily Blunt and Stanley Tucci co-star as co-assistant Emily Charlton and art director Nigel Kipling, respectively. Adrian Grenier and Simon Baker are also in it.
Okay, can I tell you something really funny, just to interrupt you very quickly?
Sure.
In Australia, I don't know why, I never heard his name as Adrian Grenier. I only have heard it as Adrian Grenier.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing.
A lot of this podcast is us discussing how to pronounce things.
Yes, the same thing is the, like, hair brand, like, hair care brand. And in America...
Garnier?
So in America, the ads, and I've heard the ads are Take Care Garnier.
Uh-huh.
In Australia, it's Take Care Garnier.
Funny.
That's like, they pronounce it like Garnier.
Because it should rhyme.
That makes a ton of sense. That, yeah. It's the same, like, Dora the Explorer makes no sense.
I also
in an American accent.
Yeah.
Pisses me off.
Yeah. I also realized that I want to issue a formal apology to Shoshana's friend who kept waking up his wife because I was laughing on the podcast last week. I'm trying to tone it down a little bit this week.
Nice.
Please still listen to our podcast.
So funny. He does. He messaged me on Thursday and he said, why did you release it so late? I'm going to be able to listen before Shabbos.
Ah. Okay. So then we're he listened to it on
their road trip.
That's why we're recording on Monday this week.
Exactly. Well, usually we'll do record on Monday. We've just had a couple of busy weeks.
Yeah, we had a couple of weird weeks. Anyway. So, although the film... I just want to read this part because I think it's interesting from the Wikipedia page. Although the film is set in the fashion world and references well-known establishments and people within the industry, most designers and other fashion notables avoided appearing as themselves for fear of displeasing U.S. Vogue editor Anna Wintour, who's widely believed to have been the inspiration for Priestley. Still, many allowed their clothes and accessories to be used in the film, making it one of the most expensively costumed films in history. Wintour later overcame her initial skepticism, saying she liked the film, and Streep in particular.
So they do every so often, like, Entertainment Weekly or Vulture. They'll do a oral history of a movie when it approaches, like, a significant anniversary. And I think it must have been the 15-year anniversary last year of The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, my God.
And the oral history was phenomenal. And they were saying how they sent in, like, quote-unquote, a spy in to see Anna Wintour's office, and they took notes on it, like snuck in, I guess, like after hours or something, took notes on her office, recreated it so perfectly. Apparently after the movie came out, she completely redesigned her office.
That's funny.
And then like, much like people were scared to talk about their experiences in the industry. And I think they were still scared at this, with this like oral history thing that was coming out, to the point that people were still talking like off the record or anonymously.
Yeah.
And yet so few people were willing to, and that's why it's weird that was her name, like Giselle Bundchen or however you pronounce it. She's in the movie.
Yeah. There's also a designer who's in it, at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just like people were terrified of her.
Yeah, it's very funny.
It's hilarious. I really recommend reading the oral history.
The book is also really excellent.
Well, I'll read the book. I haven't read the book.
The book is good. Yeah, obviously there are like slight differences. Like at the end, she like calls up her co-assistant Emily and is like, "Do you want these clothes that I got in Paris?" But in reality, she like donated all the clothes to charity.
Nice.
And then there are like a couple of other small differences. Yeah.
One of the things I really like watching this movie back, I guess it's sort of like the Legally Blonde flavor of feminism, of like you're allowed to look good and be a feminist. And like,
yeah.
And sort of like fashion doesn't make you ditzy or weird, but like, or not weird, but ditzy or, you know,
right,
not smart or whatever it is. Like, the turning point for Andy in the movie, like, at the end, the thing that makes her walk away, the thing that makes her realize she's lost herself is that she mistreats a friend or a coworker, and she realizes she doesn't want to be that person, so that's such a king shit move. She, like, gets out of the car at the end and just walks away. And then when she's, like, applying for other jobs, she's still wearing very nice clothes.
Right. She looks different. Like, she's not wearing the same things that she wore to work in the magazine. No, but there's clearly but she has changed, yeah.
And I think it's, like, such a cool end message of, like, you know, you're allowed to dress nicely. You're allowed to, like, that's not really changing who you are. Right. But the thing that does make her walk away is, like, her actions.
Right. Although, okay, I have some thoughts about that. First of all,
yes.
As far as like, I think all you have to do is watch one episode of Queer Eye to see how much it changes you when you're wearing the Queer Eye effect. Yeah. It's like when you feel confident about how you look, it changes your perspective on the 100%. World. Number one, I also saw this TikTok where this woman had like, it looked like she had just gotten like a fresh blowout, and she was like, "I do my hair like this because it means people assume that I know what I'm doing, even if I don't." And like, that to me was like very, I was like, that's wild. So like, that if you look like you put effort into 100%. Like how you dress. Yeah. The other thing I was just going to say is I actually, when I rewatched the ending, I was like, it's so unfair that Miranda Priestly compares what she does to Nigel to what Andy did to Emily, because like Andy and Emily aren't such good friends. Like, certainly they're there for each other as like co-assistants, but Emily is awful to Andy for most of the movie.
But you have to assume that like Nigel and Miranda, they're not friends outside of work.
No, she's like only nice to him though. Like
she's cordial to him. She's not actively mean to him.
No, but I think like, and she, because she's rude to like basically everyone else, I feel like Stanley Tucci is the only person in the movie that she's consistently nice to.
I don't think I'd call it nice. I just call it not mean. Like she's professional with him. Yeah. And it's because he's been there for like 23 years.
Right.
But then like, even when he does like get stabbed in the back, he's willing to look past it because he still believes the best in her, because he has to. I think like it's just,
right.
It's a really good ending to a movie.
I feel like the reason that Andy like gets out of the car, or that Anne Hathaway gets out of the car, is because Miranda goes, "Don't be silly. Like, everybody wants this life."
Yeah.
And that she's like, "Oh no. Like, is that what I'm like, am I doing so well at this job that now I'm not going to be able to leave?"
Yeah.
And so that's why she walks away.
Every man in this movie sucks except for Stanley Tucci.
100%.
Simon Baker sucks. If this movie, like, this movie would be so different if it got made today. Like,
yeah.
That like, when they kiss when they're in Paris, and she keeps giving, like, reasons she doesn't want it to happen, and he just keeps kissing her.
Yardin was watching it and being like, She's saying no.
She says, I'm not ready. She says, I've had too much to drink. And he just keeps kissing her. And I'm like, what? Oh, this would be, you couldn't do this in, like, in a good way, you shouldn't be doing this in 2022.
But, like, stone cold the next morning when he calls her baby and she says, I'm not your baby. Yeah. Ooh, love that moment.
Also, just, like, her, I think it's, like, I think that's also part of why she realizes she has to walk away when she realizes the loyalty she has to Miranda. Like, she rushes around that morning trying to tell her that she's going to be fired. And then, like, the woman she's doing it for is a bitch and she doesn't want to be in that life.
Right. Right. And also, like, how, well, also, it must be really difficult to be in a job like that where you're, like, so involved in someone's life and that she cared so much. And then she was like, that was cute that you thought I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. Also, Adrian Grenier, the worst. Yeah. So annoying. But I think everyone talks about this a lot, about how, like, yeah, she should be working instead of, like, her boyfriend should understand.
Right.
That she has, like, this job that's really good for her career and it'll only last a year.
It's also bizarre because he works in the restaurant industry, which is, like, really similar, like, crazy hours, all of that. Like, I can't believe that, that also seems unrealistic.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say? I also feel like it's weird that, like, you know, they have that group of them that's, like, the four friends that they show a couple of times. It's weird that there are a lot of queer-coded characters in this movie, but no one is outwardly queer. And I feel like it's really... it's
2006.
I don't know, but I feel like it's disappointing for the fashion industry. Like, there are people in 2006 who were out and queer in the fashion industry. It feels wrong that there's no...
But this is also, like, a mid-sized movie that maybe wouldn't have gotten made had it had, like, good representation of queer people.
I guess.
I think there's lots of, like, heavily, like, her guy friend is super heavily queer-coded. Right. The guy who works in, like, data analysis.
Then it's
weird
because you're like, are the two of them together?
Yeah, but they're not.
Yeah, because, but you only know that when they're at the gallery and she's like, I want to introduce you to someone. And he goes, ooh, art and sex.
Yeah. Also, Stanley Tucci is very clearly coded as gay in this film.
Yeah, of course.
And so is the handbag designer who she has to go and pick up something from him. That's where she meets Simon Baker.
Oh, he's not just a handbag designer.
No, he does, like, the whole line that he then changes because of Miranda.
Yeah. What's his name?
The guy, he was in Grey's Anatomy. That's where I know him.
Yeah, right. I feel like there's, like, a little frisson between, like, him and Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
Well, but I can't tell if it's, like, a flirty vibe because they're, like, colleagues or if it's flirty because it's flirty.
It's also, like, Stanley Tucci's perfect role is very clearly, like, an effeminate man who is, like...
Right.
Not dubiously gay, but, like, never fully, like, overtly gay. And just gets to wear really lovely suits.
Yeah.
He also looks so good with rings. Like, rings really suit him. And everything in this movie just, like... Stanley Tucci is my favorite man who looks like a turtle, hands down.
For sure. 100%.
Hands down.
He's one of my favorite men in the world,
he's fantastic. Have you seen the movie with him and Colin Firth where they play lovers?
No.
Bro...
I want to see it.
Bro. Okay, should we discuss a couple of... We chose this movie for one main reason, and if you haven't guessed it so far, shame on you. and it's the fact that in this week's parsha, first of all, we talk about, like, clothes that the priests wear. Some might call it the priestly clothing. Mm. And her name is Miranda Priestly. You get it? You get it?
I did not make that connection until you just said it.
Bro, I literally put it in the master doc.
No,
that was one of
priestly.
The reasons.
It just says priestly. That could just be referring
to
the
not
Tolkien.
In this document, like in our spreadsheet.
Oh.
That was like when we started talking about doing the worst part of this, like that was like the first thing I said. Anyway, this week's parsha.
I think we've established that like I do not remember any of the initial conversations
clearly.
We have about these things.
This week's parsha talking about the priestly garments. And sort of like everyday outfits that are very special outfits that hold connotations for the priests, right? Like these are clothes for a very specific thing for them to do. And like they have some type of meaning.
Well, you have to imagine that it's like putting on a uniform, right? Like very similar to how I'm sure it feels like if you're in the fashion industry, like you put on that outfit, like you're ready to go.
Right.
You know, same with like, when you put on your linen robes, when you put on your Kohen Gadol breastplate, like you're like, hell yeah, I am the Kohen Gadol.
This is a movie that's telling us that fashion is inherent to making us feel a certain way, I think.
Yeah.
It like it sends a message about what you are doing and like who you are, in the same way I think the priestly,
totally,
garments do.
100%. Yeah, it's just, it's an interesting parsha at all. Like, how often do we really talk about clothes in the parsha? It's very rare. And so for this to be, like, a very, like, thorough description of what people are supposed to wear, it really tells you that, like, what you wear says something and says something to God and says something to other people.
When I was in year six and we were learning this, we had to make, we had, like, a little, like, toilet roll model and had to make like the clothes of the Kohan, of the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. And I, that's when I learned I could not sew. Yeah, I was like, I can't do this. I'm bad at this.
I was going to say, did you enjoy that activity?
Because no, I'll file it away. No, it stressed me out. But you should do it. It's really fun. You had like, they had like a styrofoam head that you like put in the top of the toilet roll.
That's cool.
So that was like your model that you were working with.
Right. I feel like I would do it as a like Kohen Gadol makeover. Like, make the coat. Like, it still has to have all the elements that are talked about in the Parsha, right. But, like, make it make it chic, you know? I was going to say, this movie really reminds me of how I feel. Like, have you ever... What's that game with the categories and...
We call it concentration, maybe.
Yeah, but there's, like, a card game version of it.
Scategories?
No. Anomia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we've had a few instances where it's, like, makeup brand or, like, clothing brand and, like, men get it and they can't say anything. And I'm like, the clothing and makeup industry is a multi-billion dollar industry and you can't think of a single name. One. Like, I can think of a sneaker brand. I can think of plenty of brands for things that I don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie really... he says that in one, he's like, this is a multi-billion dollar industry. Like, what do you mean?
Well, she, like, Miranda, like, the classic line where she's like, oh, you see, you think you have, like, this has nothing to do with you.
When really that sweater was picked.
Exactly.
In this room. Yarden, after, so Yarden watched this movie for the first time. She was like, I have this memory of, like Meryl Streep being in an elevator, which must have been the opening scene.
It's like my Michael Hatton movie game.
Yeah. Anyway, so she was watching it for the first time, and after that scene, she turns and she goes, whew, like, and I was just like, yes, you get it. Like,
this movie has so many iconic lines.
So iconic, right? Also the, like, after the, like, florals for spring,
groundbreaking.
I, like, turned to Yarda and I was like, and she was like, what? And I was like, that's, like, something people say all the time.
Also, like, the, are you wearing the Chanel boots? Yeah. and apparently Stanley Tucci ad-libbed one of the best lines in the movie, which is in, like, the opening, I don't know, like, 15 minutes, when he goes, come on, everyone, gird your loins.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Girl, gird, which we already established earlier, is related to Garthel.
Yeah, right.
It's the same root in German. I think the other thing that I had that was, like, a bit of a parallel... Mm-hmm. Is the end, you've got this induction ceremony of the very specific things that the Kohanim have to do. And this movie is just one long induction ceremony for Anne Hathaway into the fashion world.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the extended makeover scenes. You've got the scene, which I love. Oh, brilliant filmmaking, where, like, she's walking to work and, like, the cars keep going by her.
Yeah.
And every so often a car goes by her and she's in, like, a new outfit.
That montage is fantastic. Classic. I mean, it's the same. The opening scene of the movie where they're all getting dressed is, like, I was like, this is, like, a classic opening to a movie. It's incredible.
I'm really just, like, I'm really sad that this movie, like, everyone says this all the time, they'd never make this movie today, but they might, like, Mamish, like, this movie wouldn't get made today. The fact that it's just a basic chick flick that was released, like, basic, it's just for women.
Right.
And gay men. It's a chick flick through and through, but they've got, like Meryl Streep and Anne Hathaway in 2006, huge freaking names, and they're in a chick flick, and it makes, like, $1 trillion at the box office. And, like, just bring back the star-powered chick flick.
Well, and this isn't even, like, a chick flick in the, like, it's just about, like, women are the main characters. Like, that's has relationships. There's romance. Yeah, but I guess, like, I think, like, if I think about a chick flick, I think about, like, a rom-com, like, something where it's about, it's still about their relationships with men, where I really think this is about the relationships of, like, Miranda and Emily and Andy.
No, I think you're just misdefining chick flick.
Okay.
Chick flick isn't... Chick flick is, like, a movie that only appeals...
Because it's about women, so exactly. It only appeals to women.
Look, it's a sexist term, sure. Yeah. Like, why do you... why films for and about women called chick flicks, and then movies for and about men are just called movies?
Yeah.
Or films. Like, I think, like, chick flick is designed to only appeal to... Or to appeal to women as the basis.
Yeah.
The base demographic. But most... And this, you see it a lot. Like, same with rom-coms. All of these movies that are, like, mid-budget films just go straight to Netflix now and don't have cinematic releases, which is why Jennifer Lopez's new movie, Marry Me, with Owen Wilson, like, that feels like a big deal. It's the first time we've had, like, a big chick flick in ages.
Yeah.
That's a rom-com and the chick flick.
I don't really like Owen Wilson, though. So.
I watched Made in Manhattan the other day. So
that's an excellent movie.
So bad, but so good. It's really great.
It's just like a classic, like, When Harry Met Sally type of, like, cozy rom-com, you know?
I want to compare it to the GOAT of When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, really? I think it's, like, one of those movies that's just, like, I mean, obviously, When Harry Met Sally has, like, its own, has its own thing. Right. But I do think it, like, to me, they're in the same category of, like, a movie that, like, on, like, a Sunday afternoon, if it's raining, I want to, like, curl up and watch, like, a comfort movie. Yeah,
I do, for me, however, like, I understand it's the same vibes, like, in terms of the emotion it elicits. I just feel like if I had to make a tier of rom-coms, it would be on a lower tier.
Yeah. Same as, like, 27 Dresses or, like...
I think it'd be a bit lower than 27 Dresses.
Interesting. Okay, we could make a tier of
rom-coms. I think I'm going to do it.
Let's do it. We can post it on the Instagram.
I'm just looking through. Oh, they had one scene where, like, there was actual liquid in a Starbucks cup, which you never see. Usually it's just them, like, waving four coffees around the air because they're empty, but she, like, spills it, so there's liquid in it.
Wait, I had a few other thoughts. Oh, like, just in terms of, like, the Kohen Gadol, and, like, this initiation ceremony, I think, number one, like, the hierarchy of the magazine comes into question.
Who was that?
It was David.
Nice.
The hierarchy of the magazine with, like, Miranda Priestly's opinion is the only opinion that matters. And, like, the same with, like, the Kohen Gadol, like, we don't see it so much, but, like, there must have been a hierarchy 100%. Within the Beit HaMikdash and within that structure.
Also just the longevity of the role of Kohen Gadol.
Right.
And the longevity of Miranda Priestly or Anna Wintour as like the head of this empire.
Totally.
Because they only changed, like, Kohen Gadol was a lifelong, like, you had it till you died.
Yeah.
And it seems like Anna Wintour is going the same way.
Yeah. I think also how they choose to dress Miranda Priestly is like she's just always like flawlessly but like very classically dressed, and I feel like Anna Wintour very much has like a similar type of style where like she's not wearing like the people around her wearing like wild clothes, whereas she's always kind of like in that black and that white timeless palette, like, but she has which I just think it's like interesting too. Like Kohen Gadol has this like fancy outfit and everybody else around them has like kind of the same standardized thing,
right?
And I also wanted to say, something that's different in the book that I think is actually probably, they talk about Hermes scarves at one point. It's like, that's when Emily gets hit by the car. She was picking up scarves from Hermes.
Hermes.
Yeah, great.
when you say it like that, it sounds like a Jewish bakery.
Hermes. That's funny.
No, Hermes.
Oh, Hermes sounds like a Jewish bakery.
Yeah. Sounds like where I'd get really good arugula.
Mm. Anyway, what, you're not going to marzipan? Ugh.
Mm-mm.
You don't like marzipan arugula?
They're too, like, syrupy and sticky.
I love that.
Bereke's Imma does a really similar arugula, but, like, I think much better.
Interesting. I mean, Bereke's Imma is incredible.
Maybe they can sponsor us.
I would love Bereke's Imma, please, if you're listening.
Hello?
Imma, if you're there.
Mother Bereke.
I was also going to say, wait, I was going to say something else.
That's what made Eli laugh when I said Mother Bereke.
About the Hermes scarves. So in the book, they talk about how Miranda Priestly always has like a white Hermes scarf as a part of her outfit, but then she's like very careless with them, like she just like leaves them places.
Oh, that's really funny.
And so that's why she would have had to go and be picking up more scarves. But then those scarves get tossed up in the air, and they're obviously different colored scarves, right. So it's not like 100% aligned.
So I did notice that they mentioned Hermes scarves like a handful of times in the movie, which is like a really just funny Easter egg, I guess, for fans of the book.
Yeah.
Okay, we had to go to Night Seder 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
So let's wrap up. Any last things?
I thought it was funny to watch this, and actually this is maybe another parallel of, like, if we saw the Kohen Gadol, like, I'm sure at the time they were like, wow, that's the most incredible outfit anyone's ever worn. But, like, watching The Devil Wears Prada and seeing, like, the outfits at the time were, like, incredibly, like, cutting-edge stylish, I was like, no one in the fashion industry would ever wear basically any of the things like the
skinny,
that they're wearing.
So many skinny scarves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the fat tie when they go to the fashion designers and he's wearing an untucked button-up shirt and a fat-ass tie. I was like, that is a wild early 2000s look.
Okay, how would you spruce up the Kohen Gadol outfit? We're looking at it. We can post this photo that we're looking at later on.
No, I want to do it differently.
Okay.
I want to say, would you give this, if you were Miranda Priestly, would you give this a nod, two nods, a smile, or a purse of the lips?
The smile is the best one, right?
Smile is the best, yeah. Purse lips is the worst.
I think I'd give it a nod. I think the hat throws it off for me.
Mm.
The hat's really tall. If the hat maybe had a bit more shape to it, the turban.
I don't know. I think I would purse my lips at this. Really? I don't think that this is a very powerful looking outfit, but that's just me.
I think it's not meant to be power. It's a service outfit. You're serving God. It's supposed to be comfortable. You're wearing a fucking loose ass tunic.
But then what's the breastplate for? What's the gold headpiece for?
That's supposed to be about like the glory of God. These are the clothes that you sanctify God in. Kiddush Hashem.
Okay, I would sanctify God wearing a different outfit.
I think maybe the waist needs to be a bit, like, the belt needs to be a bit thinner.
It needs to be higher, like, the chest piece should be higher. Like, I feel like the chest piece should be in front of, like, directly below his beard.
Right.
And then the waist piece could be below that. Like, if it's supposed to look like armor, it should look more like armor.
I don't think it's supposed to look like armor.
It's a breastplate.
Honestly, like, armor. I do like the little bells at the bottom, though. I think they're cute. I also like the colors. I like, it's a nice purple that they've got in this picture. Is this from the Temple Institute?
I don't know. I just found it on Wikipedia. Or on, I just Googled Kohen Gadol outfit.
Nice. No, because they're, like, much more interesting takes on this.
Yeah, totally.
I'll send also in the group chat. But, like, this one's not very good quality, but like the colors pop a bit more, like you said, like the cinched waist, like it's a much thinner belt,
right? And the breastplate is like in the right place.
The breastplate is higher, like that's a better look.
Well, and also the belt looks more like how you described it, as like an OB type belt. Yeah.
Aren't you impressed that I knew what an OB was?
No, because I do the crossword same as you.
Fair. I like this guy. He looks like a wizard.
There have been a lot of Jewish things in the crossword lately.
The name of God is one of them.
Yahweh.
Yeah. It could have been Elohim.
Cool.
Like it had the same number of letters.
Yeah.
And honestly, my first thought was, because Yahweh is such a it sounds so, like, goyish to say
does.
Yahweh. I didn't even think of it. I just thought,
that's why I waited. I was like, there's no way it's anything. Always with the Jewish clues, I, like, wait because I'm like,
same.
It's never what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
Because I'm like, it's too deep of a
And every cut. Time they ask you what book comes after what, it's always the way the Christians do it, and it's always so confusing.
Oh, really confusing, yeah.
Because, like, they have a fully different order.
But see, I don't like the second one that you sent because
he looks like
the
a
little
wizard. Look how,
it's because of the sleeves.
Yeah, look how deep his sleeves are. Wow. What a time.
Yeah. When you see, are you on New York fashion student TikTok?
A bit.
When they get dressed, I'm like, that is wild. Like, it is always, like, it starts out as, like, I would wear that. And then they start putting a corset over it. And I'm like, what the fuck? going on? Yeah.
Okay, we should go.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's been an absolute pleasure talking about The Devil Wears Prada with you.
I love this movie.
It's really good. It's an absolute classic, but, like, we should be talking about it more. Don't know who should be talking about it. Ooh, this is a vibe.
Okay, send it.
Got a vibe.
This one, see, now this is what I would, we should put these on our story and have people vote.
Yeah, we should.
On which one they like. This, to me, the most recent one you sent is, like, that to me is a God-worshipping outfit.
Right.
But that I also is power clashing, a lot of power.
I wonder how accurate this one is, though, because it doesn't look like all of the colors. Like, I don't remember, it does say gold thread, but, like, I wonder how true to form this one is, and I wonder if this is Christian-made, part of me thinks.
Yeah.
Because, he's wearing, that's not on his forehead, that's a crown, that's not really a breast, like, that's
none
not
of,
a,
yeah, none of the that's other, not a sits. And none of the other versions have any color besides, they have the pattern tunic on the top, and then the blue tunic underneath, but then it's over, like, none of them have as much color as this one does.
I do like how, the second to last one I sent, that feels true to form,
mm-hmm.
And I like the stripe of blue that they've put in his turban.
Yeah, I like that too.
Anyway, there's I don't know. I was again talking about like visual things. We always end up talking about visual things.
We'll post some photos, and y'all should let us know which ones you like best.
Okay, but until next time.
Rate, review, subscribe, recommend us to a friend.
Subscribe.
Yeah, send it to your friend who you're having Shabbat dinner with. Send the podcast so that then you can talk about.
Send us a voice note again. Only Chloe sent us a voice note.
Yeah, we would take a voice note. Really, tell your friends.
Happy Adarish on everyone.
Yeah. Misha.
I'm putting back on my outfit.
Yeah.
Anti-Semitic outfit.
Okay.